Welcome again, ladies and gentlemen, to the Disney Film Project podcast. We are your folks who come and talk about the films of the Walt Disney Company, and we do so with the happy smiles upon our faces. I'm Ryan Kilpatrick, host of the program and owner, proprietor, blogger, and I believe window and chimney sweep operator at DisneyFilmProject.com. With me, I have my fine friends who come to join the fun and talk excitedly about the latest or greatest and everything before that pictures from the Walt Disney Company. They have been studying film, I think, for a combined 7,000 years. They know what they're talking about, is what I'm saying here. First up, we have Mr. Todd Perlmutter, blogger at touringplans.com and person who is chief technical officer at DisneyDrivenLife.com. Hello, Todd. How are you?
I'm good, Ryan. It's going to be a very interesting show, I think.
I believe you are correct, sir.
There's a lot of excitement here.
There's an energy in the room, which I say even though we are not actually in a room because we're all in like separate rooms, but still, there's energy and it's flowing.
It's palpable.
It is. It's like there were angels holding us up. Also with us this evening is the lovely and talented Miss Brianna Alessio, who is a blogger at Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com, and who is also a fine film lover. Hello, Bree.
Hello, Ryan. How are you?
I'm just fabulous. Couldn't be better.
Good. I'm very happy tonight. This feels right. This is exciting.
There is, right? There's excitement. It's just, you know, bubbling over.
It's a good zen.
Yes. That's
like
a good word for it.
It's a very positive zen. Yeah.
Yes. We have also the person who edits all of this together and who will make that Zen energy angelness come out to all of you and enhance your lives in ways that you cannot yet imagine. And that is Miss Cheryl Perlmutter, who is our producer extraordinaire. How are you, Miss Cheryl?
I'm fine. I'm eating Astro cookies.
Astro cookies? Is that what you said?
Ask for cookies. The dog is asking for cookies.
Oh, the dog is asking. I misunderstood. I thought you were having cookies, which would have been great. But, you know, I'm very sorry. But perhaps from the crazy energy that we have, we will get you cookies. Like, they will materialize just out of nowhere.
I can immediately have them in a container in front of me. So I'm good.
Okay. Well, there we go. All right. So this evening, we are discussing Angels in the Outfield, the 1994 Disney film. A remake of the 1951 film. This one is got some interesting stuff to talk about. So we decided to, as we have been known to do, recruit some of our wonderful friends from around the Disney community to join us this evening. We have Tammy of the Tierra Talk podcast who is joining in. You might know her as Voyage of Ariel on Twitter. She is bringing an excitement to her role tonight. Hello, Tammy.
Hello. How are you all doing? I'm here. I'm the mermaid. I'm here. I'm excited to be talking about Angels in the Outfield, which is my only gateway to know exactly what baseball is and to kind of talk baseball. And it's my favorite baseball movie because I've not seen any other baseball movies except this one. So, yeah, I'm excited.
So I'll forewarn you then that don't understand baseball from this movie because apparently the filmmakers didn't. But that's a whole other discussion that we will get into as we talk about this. Sorry, I am a diehard baseball fan, and this movie and baseball,
Well, to learn baseball, there really is no other alternative than to watch Goofy's short, How to Play Baseball.
Yes, absolutely. They at least...
Man.
In that short, know the rules of the game and how baseball's played, as opposed to this. But that's okay. So, as I mentioned, Angels in the Outfield, Walt Disney Pictures, 1994 film, came out 3 years before the Walt Disney Company acquired the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, as they are known today. At that time, they were the California Angels, and Disney acquired them, made them the Anaheim Angels, and then they sold them, and now they're no longer the Anaheim Angels, but that's a whole other baseball thing, and this is a story about the movie. So, Angels in the Outfield. I think I've said that enough. Danny Glover starring in this one along with a cast of thousands. I think everyone who's ever been in a movie is in this film.
This has a really, really long list of actors and actresses for this movie.
This has some really great actors. This was their starting movie.
It was.
Yes.
There are two in particular that this movie, like, they launched your career after it.
And a couple really... pretty much ended here, too.
You know, it's really weird how they launched the career, because the film was kind of popular when it came out, from the gist of what I got from it, but it wasn't that popular. But I think it got them on the verge of knowing what to do in acting. So, you know, it just gave them awesome good roles in the future, too. So, you know.
Right. So you're saying it was a gateway drug.
Yes. What? Wait, what?
I think that's exactly what she said. That's what I heard.
I said what?
We're going with that.
Gateway drug.
Yeah, so we've talked about, we said lots of actors. Danny Glover is the star of the film. He's the central character in the movie, in addition to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who you might know from his recent work as Cobra Commander in G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, or, you know, you might know him from other things like, you know, Third Rock from the Sun or
Inception.
Or I prefer 500 Days of Summer, personally.
Yes.
If you haven't seen that one, that's a great
movie. I've not seen that one yet.
Bree, that's right up your alley.
Really?
You need to see that.
We're both musical people, and we have not seen it. That's just so funny.
That's not right.
I know. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, you need to see that one. But in addition to those two, you've got Tony Danza's in this movie, Christopher Lloyd's in this movie, Adrian Brody is in this movie, Matthew McConaughey is in this movie. It's a long list. As
Dermot
Todd
Mulroney.
Said. Dermot Mulroney shows up for a few moments.
Apparently Glenn McQueen from Pixar had stuff to do with this movie, apparently.
Crazy. Yeah, I mean, after the guys that we mentioned, like Danny Glover and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are the central characters in the movie, but, you know, Tony Danza is in it for, what, maybe 10 minutes in the entire movie?
Yeah, a very short amount of time.
Give or take.
Yeah, and he was a big...
No, I think he's in for a little bit longer. Well, I was just watching the movie beforehand, so... Oh. Yeah, a little bit more longer than 10 minutes, but... Because it's, like, the big ending, the big finale, so that's, like, a huge... That's, like, a long time.
Yeah, don't get me started.
Especially with the slow motion.
Let me just say this. Tony Danza doesn't know how to pitch. All right. Christopher Lloyd is in the movie, but again, like he's not a central character,
what?
Which is odd, because at this point...
He is definitely a central character. No way!
Cheryl?
I have to agree with Cheryl.
Folks, okay. I'm afraid that our zen is being ruined.
He is the only angel in the film that talks.
Okay.
Yes.
And, you know, explain.
And he gives the rules.
Todd's going to put up the
Ryan has Ryan has a point to make, because I agree with Ryan's point that he's about to make.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
make point.
Just let me say, he is a huge star at the time this movie comes out, and he's very, like, you could have this movie without him in it. If you took his character out, you'd be okay.
No, you wouldn't.
Nah, I disagree.
You would not know the rules.
But you don't.
I'm going to be Switzerland and just stay neutral on this.
So, I guess I wasn't quite the point that I was thinking Ryan's going to make. My opinion was, is for a movie that's titled Angels in the Outfield, where the angels are supposed to be participating, I actually find that they participate very little in the movie, actually. There's only a few scenes where they actually do stuff. And I guess that's probably one of the, looking back at it, that's probably one of the more disappointing aspects of the movie, is I would have liked more angel magic in the movie.
But the reason why there was no more angel magic in the movie is because once they won the pennant, which we find out from Al,
which they did not, by the way.
Well, they won something because they went off to the next series.
They won their league title. They didn't win the pennant.
Whatever.
No, they didn't. That's another part of the reason why this movie doesn't understand baseball. But to be fair, most baseball movies don't.
According to the movie, they won the pennant.
They won something. I don't care what they won, but they won.
Because, and then once they won, they could not be portrayed. They could not out. The angels were no longer allowed to help the team.
Let's talk about my theory. What do people think this movie was actually about? And then I'll tell you what I think this movie was actually about.
About?
I think this movie was about the Walt Disney Company wanting to buy the angels and use them as content for their multimedia company.
Were any of the real angels in the film, like the players?
No, they were all other actors.
And how is that buying the angels?
No. I, 3 years after the movie came out, they bought the Angels. This is the same time that they had created the Mighty Ducks movie, and they founded the Mighty Ducks hockey team. The stadium for the Angels is like 4 blocks away from Disneyland. So my opinion is the movie was made and was deliberately made as the Anaheim Angels because they wanted to buy the Angels and use them as, you know, content for whatever they did. In the same way that they did do with the Mighty Ducks, right? They had a Mighty Ducks animated series, they had a series of films, and then they had the actual hockey team. It's just like if you have a Goofy cartoon and then you go see Goofy at the theme parks, it's the same idea. You make Angels in the Outfield movies or Angels cartoons or whatever, and then you go see the Anaheim Angels play baseball.
I just want to say there's a lot to be said for superpowered ducks. We can continue now.
That's very true. That's a good point.
But they did go make sequels on the Angel series, but they did not use the baseball team, I believe.
Right.
So I guess I meant more what was the actual story about.
Oh, sorry.
Well,
go, Tabby.
I think it was about, you know, knowing that it can happen. You know, I'm just putting, you know, I'm using a movie quote, but, you know, anything can happen. What was, like, the catchphrase, like, on the movie posters? Like, something magical's coming your way and it can happen or something like that?
It was,
but,
it was it could happen, yeah. It could happen.
Or you gotta happen. Believe in a whole host of other similar phrases.
You just gotta believe, yeah.
Jamie was saying that was, like, the running joke almost of the film.
Yeah.
And, by the way, JP says it can happen 6 times in the film.
Yes. 6 times? Wow.
Yes, 6 times. I know some trivia. Yay!
Well, what do you think it was about, Todd?
So I don't think this movie was actually about the kid or his father or his getting it back to a family. I know that's what happened in the movie, but this was the first time I've watched this movie in probably more than 10 years. Okay. Cheryl and I watched at least once together, but it also came out before we met each other too. So we never saw it together in the theater, for example. But, this movie was not about Roger getting a family despite all appearances, because Al says that at the very end of the movie that they were really there to check up on Mel Clark and make sure that he had a last hurrah on Earth. And that was really the real reason why they came to help the team. Had nothing to do with Roger. Roger was just a convenient side gig.
I didn't even think of that.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I disagree.
I agree with Todd.
I don't think it was about Roger getting a family. That's the thing. I mean, I think it was more about, like, if you want to cast it, it's more about the tagline. It's more about focus, you know, generating belief among a group of people.
Right.
His story is, you know, secondary to that of the Angels. That's just a way to kind of make that story more personal.
Yes. And like I said, I mean, that, you know, they clearly state that, you know, Roger was just a convenience. It let the magic happen, but the reason for the Angels being there was definitely Mel in the end result.
What's the manager's name? Danny's name in it. Oh my gosh, how do I not?
George Knox.
Yeah. How do I not know this? This is like one of my favorite Disney movies. You know, I really think that George, you know, in the very beginning, he was talking to the guy who is sponsoring the team, right? What was his name? And he passed away recently, too.
Hank Murphy, the owner of the team.
Yes, Hank Murphy. Thank you. Oh, these names are going right over my head. Anyways, so I think it was kind of also a last stand for George Knox as well. I think both Tony's and Danny's characters both shared that in some certain way. And I think Tony's, Danny's, and Joseph's characters all shared it. Three. It was split up in threes. There you go. Like a pop.
I'd like to offer a different thought. What if the film was really about Maggie? and what she brought and portrayed inside outside the movie. I mean, because I'm looking at the scene in particular where she has to go, where Roger has told her that I believe in, I've seen these angels, and she goes in, she takes the two kids, goes up, stands up for him when most people would have laughed him out and not believed him. She upright believes him, and because of what she's done as a foster care, she takes him, she says, I've seen other things happen, and this is the way this kid, this is what this kid, I believe him. And I think this was mostly, I think this is part of maybe a better or bigger story that never happened, and that's why, like, at the end they do a ring around the house, a halo around the house too.
So wait, maybe what if she was secretly an angel and we did not know it?
That's another story.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, here's another theory. What if the film was about Matthew McConaughey's character? Oh!
But all he appears is, like, shirtless in the movie, and that's it.
And
which
three
is
lines.
What he usually appears as in the film.
Yeah, and it's
what he appears as in real life.
Exactly. That's
doesn't he walk down the street like that?
I think so.
Wouldn't you?
Or Adrian Brody and I forget Dylan's last name there. The guy
McDermott.
Who plays McDermott as well. All three of them. These are the three that they go on to bigger and better things.
That was Dylan McDermott?
Yes,
yeah, that
playing
was his dad,
Roger
yeah.
Sprouter, yeah.
Wow. I really
think that all the characters play a huge part in it, no matter how small their scene or how many few lines they may have. I think they're all part of the angels' plan to suit everybody's needs.
The angels have something for everybody.
Yes. They will fulfill your needs. What you really need at that moment. Roger needed a family. So did JP. And, sorry, I went all Miley Cyrus on you guys. And then George Knox needed, I don't know. It's just, he needed to have hope or faith in his life. And I guess that was the kids. Like, he needed to have angels in his life, and that was the kids, their innocence. And also, David, the man who helps them with all the snacks and stuff, he needed to learn how to take, nachos attached to his butt and sitting on nachos and getting spilled by sodas. And the angels taught him that by
Those
having...
Those are important life lessons.
Yeah, they are. They are definitely important life lessons, especially when you have, like, a $100 suit on or something like that, and you need to know how to get mustard out of your shirt and, whatever.
He's, like, one of my favorite characters in the movie, actually, so I really enjoy his screen time.
I think where Todd and I were kind of going a little bit is that the angels in the movie are kind of inconsequential, not in the general scheme of things, right? Because they're more of the plot device that moves things along, as opposed to being characters in the movie.
Yes.
So they're what Hitchcock would have called the MacGuffin. The characters are the folks who are Knox and Roger. More than anything. But I think, like, for me, having Tony Danza be Mel Clark or Christopher Lloyd be the angel, I felt like that was a bad move because of the fact that because those characters don't have arcs and they're not, like, the core characters are Roger, JP, and George Knox. And then the other characters are there to kind of service the story from there. So, like, having Tony Danza as Mel Clark, like, took me out of the movie for a second. You know what I mean? So I see him and I'm like, oh, look, it's the Who's the Boss guy. And I don't think, like, it's a washed up pitcher.
I have never seen him in anything else except this movie, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm just speaking from
you
a person.
You have to go Google Who's the Boss TV show.
That's right. So do you have Netflix?
No, I do not have Netflix.
Okay. Well,
I'm in the Stone Age.
You have to save your money, and there's two TV shows that you have to get every episode of and watch. Taxi.
Oh.
Okay. And Who's the Boss? And your life.
I could just YouTube it. I get some clips here and there. So yeah, okay, I'll try doing that. Yes.
Yeah, and telling her to watch every episode of Who's the Boss is probably a bad idea.
No, you can stop after like season 3.
Oh, because after
wow,
that they're really
that's,
horrible.
Even then, that's
wait, is this a reality? Is it a reality TV show?
No, it's not.
No, it's a sitcom.
This was before reality TV existed.
Oh.
He was the original Mr. Mom.
So it's the same thing with Christopher Lloyd, right? As Al, he comes in and, you know, he's the head of the Angels, I guess is what you'd call him. But, like, at this point, he'd done Back to the Future, you know? I mean, he was huge. And so it kind of takes me out of the movie for a second, and you're like, it's Christopher Lloyd, and, you know.
Where's the DeLorean?
Exactly.
As long as he's not a bad character, like in Who's Framed Roger Rabbit, I can totally see him as Al after seeing him as Doc Brown. You know, because they're, you know.
I could take him as John Big Boutte any day. in The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Okay.
Yeah, because we've all seen that, Todd.
I don't know that. I'm just going to laugh and nod my head and kind of pretend like I know what it is. Yeah, okay.
You know, doomed is your soul and damned is your life. You know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. So go. Let's talk about Angels in the Outfield now. I would imagine that everybody, just by hearing the title Angels in the Outfield, has an idea of what the movie, the basic premise of the movie, that, and we've already, you know, revealed that that a group of actual angels help the California Angels to win baseball games. But there's more to it than that, of course. We have Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, who is ditched by his father, Dermot Mulroney, who does not play a convincing bum father to me after seeing him.
No, not me either.
Well, he's a jerk in the beginning of the movie. I can't stand that character. I didn't, you know, I don't have anything nice to say, so I'm not going to say it at all.
There you go.
He's that character that we're supposed to hate.
Yes.
Because, we're supposed to earn that disrespect for him because of what he did to his son.
It's hard. It's a hard sell when he's, like, laughing the entire time he's delivering his lines.
Yeah. Exactly.
He was laughing?
I mean, that's not his forte, is playing the scummy, you know, jerk dad. That's not his wheelhouse there.
But this is literally, like, his first role, right?
It might have been.
What else has he been in?
He was in, I remember him from My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yep. And About Schmidt and Zodiac.
And those are funny movies he was in, right?
Yes.
Okay. Wait, was Zodiac a comedy?
Todd, Zodiac a funny movie?
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, sorry. Zodiac is about the Zodiac killing. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. It's about a serial killer.
I know what it is, and then that was kind of confusing.
And he recently did the voice for Green Lantern not too long ago, you know, so he's...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Trying to stretch his boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, so Dermot Mulroney leaves Roger in the foster care of the aforementioned Maggie that Cheryl was talking about, and Roger and his friend JP, who's played by Milton Davis Jr.
I have a question on this before we go too far into Milton. Milton Davis Jr., any relation to Sammy Davis Jr.? I couldn't find that out, but I was just wondering.
I can't even find any information on how to contact him. I can't find anything. Zip.
Yeah, so he hasn't really acted in much at all since.
Yeah, but my question was, maybe he didn't have to, because if he's Sammy Davis Jr. related, he probably has mucho dinero.
So, let's keep in mind that a lot of parents just stick their kids in movies, and they do really well, like, once or twice, and then they're never seen again. It happens way more often than the other direction. First three episodes of Zoom, uncredited. The original.
You were on Zoom?
The original one, not the one you're thinking of.
Oh my God.
You were in it?
The original one, yeah.
Wait, on Nick?
No. The original Zoom. So you're talking about the Zoom from Nickelodeon. No, Zoom existed long before Nickelodeon existed.
He's talking about from the Jurassic period. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, like, okay.
So well, you know how old Neil McDonough is? I'm only 2 years younger than he is.
How old is Neil? I don't know. I don't check ages. I don't like checking ages.
Okay.
I like to believe that they're young. You know what I mean? Okay.
Then I'm young too. Let's go.
So Roger and JP are big fans of the California Angels, and his father makes an offhand comment, Roger's father, when he's leaving, and says, you know, basically they'll be a family again when the Angels win the pennant, because the Angels are terrible, which was true at the time this movie came out. for our younger fans who follow baseball, the Angels haven't been terrible for about 13 years, so you probably don't understand this. It would have made much more sense to remake it as the Pirates, as from the original movie, because the Pirates have been terrible for about 15 years.
Oh, snap.
Well, they have. They haven't had a winning record since 1992.
Sarah's not going to be happy with you. There we go.
I'm sure she laments that fact as well. All Pirates fans do. Although they're doing okay this year, so we'll see. But the Angels at the time were not good, right? So it lives up to that name and, of course, helps Disney synergy so that they could get a team there in Anaheim. But what happens is Roger and JP get to go to the game, and Roger sees the Angels who, after he prays, are helping the team to win baseball games. And that leads him to his relationship with George Knox, played by Danny Glover, who's the manager of the team. And Knox keeps him around as kind of the person who can let him know what to do, depending on who's got an angel hanging around them or not, which I thought was interesting.
One thing, when Joseph's character does pray, what I think I noticed is that when you look at the screen, when he's looking up at the sky, when he says, if there is a God, you could see a hidden Mickey. That's for Steve Barrett. Shout out to him. Anyways,
he prays, he's praying on our show.
Yay! Good.
Thanks,
Steve. What I'm going to say is that the Angels have never made an appearance. When the kids have been there watching the Angels, and they have never, ever made an appearance, not that anybody can see. But after he prays, they do make an appearance. So I think the Angels are, if they were just there for Mel, I guess we would have known before Joseph's character prayed. It's kind of hard. I'm really being confusing right now, but do you understand what I mean by saying that?
Yeah,
sure. Okay. I think sometimes.
I think you can reconcile the two and say maybe there were rules, right? Because Al lays out the fact that there are rules for the Angels,
yes.
And maybe
yes.
Somebody had to pray in order for them to come and do the things that they had to do. But it may have been that what they needed to do was, you know, help the Angels and give Mel his moment in the sun. So, yeah, like Todd said, it could have been a side benefit. You know, these are the things that men will ponder for decades and centuries to come as to whether or not this is what was going on. All right, here's my first they don't know what they're doing with baseball complaint.
Okay.
All right. So
get
the
ready
first
for
game,
about 100 of these.
Yeah, there are.
I just can't.
The first game that they play where the Angels show up, I can't remember the team they were playing. I think it was the White Sox.
Blue Jays.
Is it the Blue Jays first? Okay.
We got it, Todd. We got it. We got the right trivia. Woo! Yeah, okay. I'm just saying.
Doesn't matter. Because the next day, they start a new series with a new team, the Oakland A's, right?
Yes.
Okay. Doesn't happen.
No, that's fine. That could happen. The next day, they play Oakland. No problem. All right? The next game that they play, they're playing a different team. That would never happen. Baseball happens in 3-game series.
Exactly.
2 or 3-game series, or 4.
Oh, I just thought it was 1. So they play them once, and then they play them a second time and a third time, like just to make sure they won? Is that what's going on?
No, you play 162 games, but there's only 16 teams you play against. So you play every team 10 to 12 times.
What? That's crazy.
I noticed that discrepancy in the film. I said, something's not right here.
Yes. That was extremely irritating.
Yeah. It could have saved them a lot of money just playing the same team over again.
As opposed to football, where you have like 14 games, period.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's short.
Yeah.
16, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, it's changed.
But that just bothered me because it's like, you can't go from this team to this team to this team. Another issue I had with this, every game was a day game until the last game. Which would never happen. unless you're the Cubs, that doesn't happen. And even the Cubs are not going to have 3 straight day games. They're going to play 1 game at night. All right, sorry. I'm done with that.
Okay.
But what, you know, there's the baseball movie montage, which follows, of course, of the team moving up the standings and making spectacular plays and all that sort of thing, which happens in every baseball movie ever made. Yeah. But since you guys don't watch baseball movies, I guess that would be...
No. So, I mean, let's talk about it. Not only do they do that, but every... What is it? It's trope, right? Whenever you have a sporting game in a movie, right, the sporting game will always go down to the last play. Nothing that matters before that in the movie has anything to do with anything else. It's always all about the very last play of the game, which happens
like
in this
movie.
Like
the last seconds of the game.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Which they screwed up in the movie.
Go for it.
All right, so this spoiler alert for a movie that's 15 years old.
And that's very good.
Yes. The last game that they're playing, okay, the Angels go up in the bottom of the eighth inning. The Angels go on top, okay? And Mel Clark goes out to pitch the ninth inning. So the Angels are at home, meaning that they will get to bat last if they are tied or behind in the ninth inning. But when one of the players hits a ball that Matthew McConaughey's character ends up catching, the announcer says that'll be the ball game because he thinks it's going to be a home run. No, it wouldn't. Wouldn't have been the ball game. The Angels still would have been able to come to bat.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, that was your
take. It's okay.
I don't know anything, so I'm going to stay silent because I don't want to say anything because I'm going to be wrong if I say something.
No, but I mean, like, it's...
Oh, that would be correct. You would be wrong, because Ryan works
yeah,
in the...
Ryan
works in the industry, so we have to defer to him.
Like the back-to-back games thing, that was just a minor irritation, just because, you know, I watch baseball games all year round. That's a factual error, right? If he's going, you know, hey, the game will be over right here. No, it wouldn't. And you know, the guy was a manager, he was a player, the character, the announcer, and it's just a factual error. Like, it literally, like I was saying about Tony Danza and Christopher Lloyd, like, took me out of the movie for a second. I'm like, wait a minute. No, it wouldn't. They'd get to bat in the bottom of the ninth.
I'm just happy the Angels won in the end of the movie.
Aren't we all?
I didn't know what to say. I just...
we had the trope of the montage and everything, and also, like in every sports movie, we have the it's darkest before the dawn, everybody must stand up and have faith in the team before they can win their whatever pennant or whatever. We have it like twice in this.
Yes, that's called the magic feather from Dumbo. That's the title for that trope.
I like it.
Yeah, that's where that comes from. Magic feather.
Magic feather.
Oh, well, we have the magic feather of the press conference where George Knox has to stand up and basically say that Angels are helping the team. He can't bring himself to actually come out and say that, which I thought was interesting.
Well, he couldn't because he would have gotten fired if he did. So he actually skirts around the issue.
He does it very gracefully when he's speaking in his big, huge speech. And I love how he takes what everybody's saying and puts it in perspective as in other people's beliefs. You could call it faith. You could call it, what's the line he says? You could call it faith. You can call it spirits. You can call it whatever you want. But this, what we're calling it, is angels, and you can call it something differently. So I think that he takes it and he describes it very gracefully, and then Maggie takes it from there, as Cheryl had pointed out already.
I think he puts it in baseball terms. He puts a lot of it in baseball terms in as well, because he references, you know, the more generic baseball terms or sports terms, you know, sports, faith, whatever. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like because he has that moment where he's going up to read the statement where he's going to deny the fact that there were angels at all, and then he throws that out when he sees Roger, JP, and Maggie come in, and he has this moment where you see him basically start to – he kind of has this sigh, and you – like, my expectation was, okay, he realizes he's going to get fired, but he's going to say it anyway, and then, you know, something will happen so that he doesn't get fired. It just kind of took the teeth out of that moment for me. It was like, all right, I'm going to say this, but I'm not really saying it. You know, it was like, I'm going to make my big stand without actually doing it.
Well, he did have a speech prepared to read, and then he said, you know what, I'm just going to ad-lib this. So for something right. that is ad-libbed on the spot, even though it is not, and it's a movie, if it was in real life, you know, I would have done the same exact thing. Because also, I don't think there's anything else you could say.
Also a trope in movies like this, every time someone gets up with a prepared speech, they always put it to the side and don't read it.
This is very true. So we have that moment, and then we have the moment where Mel is on the mound, and we find out that he has 6 months to live. Al tells Roger that, and they have to somehow make Mel believe that he has an angel, and we have everybody stand up and flap their wings, which I think is what the shot that everyone has seen from this movie. Like, I had not seen this before I watched it the other day.
Oh, really?
But I had seen that. Yeah,
you had not. Oh, that's.
I've never seen this film before, so I've never even seen that. The whole.
Oh, really?
And Tammy is demonstrating
right now.
Nice.
So, you know what's funny is it's been a while, and I thought it happened more in the movie. I didn't realize it just happened in the final game.
Yeah, I didn't either because I've seen it. Like I said, that I've seen it multiple times. I've seen the clip. Like at Disney parks and in, you know, I've seen it on ESPN. I've seen it, you know, I've seen the clip 100 times probably. But I like you, Todd, I thought like, oh, well, people find out about this like midway through the season and, you know, they start doing it. But no, it's just, it's that last game. Which, by the way, is not for a pennant. This is something that happens in every baseball movie. That it happens in Major League, which is one of the best baseball movies. The pennant is when you win the National League or American League. They won the American League West.
I think they won the division title. I think they were playing to win more salami. If you get my joke, get it?
Nice.
They wanted salami. Yeah, I know. They wanted better salami. They, you know, that team, the Angels, could never get the right salami. I felt so bad, but you know. And then George Knox had like to push over the table. All the food went down the ground.
That was such a waste of food. That broke my heart.
That was a lot of really good food. Made me hungry, and I was sad to see it go.
I'm sure the guys ate it off the floor.
I don't know.
Ladies wouldn't. I'm sure the guys would have wanted to.
Other important things we learned in the movie, it's really a song about a guy named Jose.
Yes.
Wait. Yeah, they come over and they go, Jose. And then Neil was like, oh, he's like, he's like, oh, you mean it's about a Mexican dude?
That was funny.
And then you learned that you can chew a lot of gum while pitching. And then do all your moves. He's like, See, I'm demonstrating these things so nobody can see it.
So they were actually making fun of the – a lot of ball players are actually very superstitious.
Most ball players.
And what they did with Neil McDonough's character was they threw every single superstition in his character. So if you watch him when he's in the background, he's always acting out one of the superstitions that pitchers tend to have. One of them is chewing a big wad of gum before game. You know, and one of them is the extended moves and stuff like. It goes on and on. There's a whole, you know, series of them that they do, and he
has his magic 8-ball too. Will I win? Will I win? Will I win? Win? Ah, oh. That's up. Yes. And then the funniest thing is when they're coming into the changing room, whatever locker room or something, and they're hitting the poles, and then the guy's like, "Why do we even do it?" And then the other guy says, "It's for luck." And then Neil's like, "Maybe we should have done this before the game." And I'm like, "Yeah." I don't know. I memorized that whole locker scene. He goes, one more loss, One more loss, which could have been a win. You call yourselves professionals. I have never, ever seen a worse group of 25 players. You don't think as a team. You don't play as a team. You don't even lose as your team. Y'all got your heads so far up your butts, you can't even see the light of day. One more loss and I'll do this. And he throws it, and then Neil gets hit in the head with a baseball bat. I just lose it there. I die. Oh, my God, it's hilarious. That was my impression of Danny Glover. Thank you. Thank you. I will win an Academy Award. Thank you. I got a nice clap. Thank you.
All right, so with that, we'll wrap this up.
Already?
That was impressive, Tammy. That was impressive.
You can tell this is my favorite baseball movie. I haven't seen any of the baseball movies, so, you know, I have time on my hands.
Well, the good thing is, like, you wouldn't be prejudiced against the game of baseball because they don't know how to play it in this movie, so that's good.
No, I think it's I enjoy it. I always cheer for them. I think they're going to lose, but I know they're going to win, but then I think they're going to lose. So I'm always, like, I jump up at the end. I'm like, yes, they won, you know, kind of like that. That's the only thing I – yeah. What else should I say?
No, it's fine.
It looks like a prison photo.
It did look like a prison photo.
That was funny.
Yes.
That was good.
So, I mean, I guess we can talk about a little bit about, you know, we ran through the story of the movie. Like Todd and I have pointed out, the movie is a series of tropes, right? And don't get me wrong, like, I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable, but there's nothing in here where I go, oh, never seen that before, or that's interesting, or that's creative. I mean, it's just a classic type of sports movie where, you know, you have the underdogs who come from behind, and like I referenced Major League, like, this movie is just like Major League. It's almost exactly like Major League, the difference being instead of following the catcher who's trying to get his ex-wife back, we're following the kid who's trying to get his dad back. I mean, other than that, it's pretty much the same thing.
We forgot to talk about the other subplot, which is the guy with the big chin. And I want to say Chet, you betcha,
Ranch.
But that's from Fairly
Odd.
Ranch Wilder.
Why am I forgetting all these names? And I know this film,
you know.
So well. Yes, Ranch Wilder. And we forgot to tell that he just doesn't like George Knox. He wants to get all the attention. And then he has this, like, little guy next to him. Is the guy who plays his side... It's not really a sidekick, but his other...
announcer.
Announcer. Thank you. This, the other announcer. Was he in anything else? Is he famous or something?
I was trying to figure out who he was, what his name was. I couldn't figure out what his name was, so I don't know if he's famous or not.
I was confused at who he was. I don't think he's any famous or anything, but he always was trying to put his word into everything, but then Ranch Wilder would just cut him off. So it was kind of like a fight back and forth between, you know, Ranch and him. But, you know, but it's okay. And, you know, he tries to, you know, he tries to get PJ, right? Is that his name, PJ?
JP.
So JP... when JP's crying, he tries to get, he's the one who finds out about the Angels, and he causes all the problems, which leads to the press conference that we have, that speech that Ryan thinks that's an award-winning speech right there from Don Knox. He just loves that speech. Anyway,
George Knox, not Don Knox. That's a whole different person.
I will say, if Don Knox had given the speech, it would have been more entertaining.
Talk about this plot that she's talking about with Ranch Wilder there. Anyone else pay attention that the guy in charge fires Ranch at the end?
Yes.
I'm wondering if he had paid Ranch, knowing that George, I mean, I wonder if he got George in a trade. And in some, because George had said he'd been with another team with Mel.
Oh, okay. So the story, as it goes, is that he used to play for, was it Cincinnati beforehand? He says,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Cincinnati.
And he played for the Reds.
And he played there with Mel Clark. Also played on the team. But long before Mel Clark played, he was a catcher, and Ranch Wilder's character was running bases and went cleats up into him. He took out his knee on purpose, and thus it ended his career, and he became the coach at Cincinnati, was there for 10 or 15 years, I forget which they say in the movie, and then he eventually gets traded to the Angels.
But I wonder if the guy that, because obviously he had power to fire him, I wonder if he had hired him in the beginning, knowing George was coming and knowing their animosity towards each other.
Oh, it gets so Ranch Wilder had George's job before George got George's job, if you pay attention to the movie as well. Okay. He was the prior coach.
Okay.
Yeah, Wilder was the manager and was sort of forced out by the Hank Murphy character. They brought in George Knox, who was the manager in Cincinnati. And you got to remember, at the time this movie came out in the 90s, Cincinnati had been pretty good. They won the World Series in 1990, I believe. And so, you know, that made sense at the time. And Knox came in and was, you know, supposed to turn things around for the Angels. And of course, Wilder didn't think he deserved to be fired, of course. And he spent the movie, you know, poking fun at George Knox because, you know, there's no way that he could be a better manager than he had been.
Mm. Yep.
Yes.
Which is, believe it or not, happens a lot in baseball, things of that nature. Not managers don't usually go on to become play-by-play guys, but, you know, I was willing to let that one slide. But the things like Mel Clark throwing 159 pitches in that last game, that's not one I would let slide. You don't throw a guy who hasn't pitched in years. He doesn't throw 159 pitches. You don't take a Cy Young Award winner. He doesn't throw 159 pitches. I would be hard pressed to find the last time anyone threw that many pitches, even in 1994.
It's no wonder why he had no shoulder left.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys like the soundtrack at all?
I didn't
you
actually
like the soundtrack.
I didn't mind it. I just didn't. You know, it didn't bother me, and it didn't stand out to me.
I thought it was pretty. I loved it. I love how it's just, it sounds so magical. I love it. I just love it. I just love it. I love it. It's on my iPod. Woo!
I'm with Todd that it was just kind of, you know, there for me. I mean, the music was nice, but to me it didn't, you know, it wasn't powerful like Mary Poppins or something.
Like the music from Soaring, which is inspirational.
It wasn't. Yeah. It's again. Let me make this clear to everybody listening. It's not a musical. I'm just saying that I think it's very. It just makes me want to sing opera. I just love the music. I don't know why, but yeah. And can I quote one more thing from the movie? Because I love quoting. Well, because there's one of the guys comes into the locker room and everybody's like, it's after a game has been lost, and it's right before Knox makes that big hullabaloo that I already did, and one of the players goes, well, we do it all summer, and it's a big bummer. No matter who we play, we give the game away, because we can't win. That would be a sin. We even lose the games before they begin. Ha! And I, yay! Now, that's the musical, like that's the only singing part in it, besides the Jose, can you sing?
It's actually that song that sets George Knox's character off.
Yeah, he's like, yes. People. That's what he says. Save it, Maple! And then he goes off. I should have done that first before I did my thing.
You're fine. It's all good.
Yeah, no, it's all fine.
So, Tammy, I thought you might like to take this as an opportunity to talk about an upcoming bit of excitement you're going to have in your life.
Why, Todd, how smart of you to, you know, ask me this wonderful question, because, yes, I do have something so amazing to tell all of you. We are going to be having Neil McDonough on the show, and guess who's going to be joining me for the interview? None other than
Adrian Brody.
No, unfortunately not. He's busy with the Godfather movies and the Sopranos, where it kind of blacks out right before the end. But
Matthew McConaughey?
No, he's actually busy filming. I did try him. Maybe another time, he said.
Oh, sorry.
Try a female.
What?
Try a female.
Try a female?
Female?
Yes.
Oh, what's her face? Who plays Maggie in the movie?
Brenda Fricker.
Yeah, Brenda Fricker.
No.
I can't seem to find a trace of her on the planet, but we have Buffer Fry. Bree's going to be on the show. I'm so excited. because me and Bree love Neil a lot, and yes, we are going to be telling him throughout the whole show while we're recording with him how much we love him and his mustache.
We are? Oh, yes. His mustache, yeah, okay. Yes.
Him and his mustache. He's just one guy, you know. You ladies who are listening to the Disney Film Project, you guys know how cute some people are. Neil is just the cutest of the cutest. You know, Todd and Ryan, you guys are so cute. You're up there on that level, too. I'm not forgetting about you guys. I love you.
Aw, thanks.
Hugs. I'm hugging you through the computer. But yes, we are having an interview, and it will be up towards the beginning of September, right before I go to Disney World, and I meet up with Cheryl and Todd and maybe Ryan, because I don't know if he lives in Florida or not. But
sadly.
Oh, dang. Bree and I, yes, we will be interviewing Neil for the show, so it should be up towards the beginning, middle, or end of September. I'll surprise you guys. Just follow me on Twitter at Voyage of Ariel, and you can check out more about our podcast on iTunes at Tierra Talk Show, or you can check out our website, which is www.TierraTalkShowPodcast.com.
And you're doing some other interviews as well that we couldn't yes. fit those movies in our schedule, unfortunately, because our schedule is like apparently planned in some. Planned until Neverland. So.
I know. It's very crazy. But, you know, it's completely all right. You guys, hopefully when I get these interviews up, I'll let you guys know. And, you know, and I'll let everybody know. Of course, I'll let everybody know. But we have a lot of interviews that have to do with Halloween Disney movies. So, you know, I can say that the Tower of Terror interview is up already. That's our 9th episode. And we got Nia Peeples, who's in Pretty Little Liars at the moment, and Alistair Duncan, who plays the snobby British man in the man ghost in the film. So if you want to check that out, you guys have to review Tower Terror. I really want to know what you guys think of it. I think Ryan would love it because
take the chicken elevator. I love the chicken elevator in Tower Terror. It's a great. No one ever believes me about the chicken elevator.
No.
That's the whole thing. It's Tower Terror.
I always go on the chicken elevator. I don't go on the ride. You don't go on the ride either, Cheryl?
No.
As we said in our last episode, Neil, who you're interviewing, played Dum Dum Dugan in Captain America. But did you know he's actually connected? He has a deeper connection to the Avengers than even that?
I did not know such thing.
Dun-dun-dun. Okay, so many, many years ago, he went through a stint of playing the voice acting role in some video games for Dr. Bruce Banner, who is the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Yeah, he is.
I'm nodding my head and smiling like I know what you're talking about.
That's okay. when is the movie coming out again, Ryan?
May 4th, 2012.
Okay, just checking. and not a few years back, Neil McDonough was in a movie called Traitor with Don Cheadle. Now, Don Cheadle plays James Rhodes from the Iron Man movie. Second Iron Man
movie. Iron Man 2.
And,
that's right.
And I think he's in the upcoming Iron Man 3 as well.
One could only assume.
It's mind-blowing. Oh, my gosh.
So, he's connected to two other Avengers right there.
That's Todd, thank you for enlightening us. I am so honored to hear the wise wisdom words and trivia facts by Todd. Toddles. Toddalina. Thank you, Todd.
That's what he does. That's what he's here for.
But also, I believe Todd has something called the Star Wars reference.
Oh, yes. So, there's it took a lot. No, remember we were talking in the beginning about the huge cast of characters in this movie? Okay, that goes on for many, many pages. Okay. So basically near the end is when I found the Star Wars reference. And it's small, it's minor.
But it's there, and that's the important thing.
It's there, and that's the important thing. There is a tie to Star Wars, and that is truly what matters. So remember there's George Knox's character, right? And then there's a second coach who coaches the pitcher's pen, right?
Yes.
Otherwise known as the bullpen, yes.
Pen, right. Okay, sorry. I I knew it had some name. Penn was in there. I was close.
You bring the wonky knowledge. I bring the sports knowledge. It's a complimentary thing. That's why we're here.
So he was the coach, and he's not titled with any name, but he was in the Star Wars Rebel Assault video game as well.
We're Rebel reaching Assault, deep into the bag of tricks
Rebel
now.
Rebel Assault 2. That's the only Star Wars connection I found.
Well, I was going to nominate Back to the Future as, like, an honorary reference. Because, I mean, DeLoreans just rule.
Yeah, but we were talking last episode about people who are just a reference unto themselves. And I think it's safe to say that Christopher Lloyd himself is just a reason for goodness.
Indeed.
Okay. Yeah. So it's
seconded.
Yeah.
Thirded.
I got more fun stuff. There's actually one character at the end, the hit or die guy.
Oh yes.
Okay, who Tony Danza's character Mel is trying to strike at the end. He was actually I believe the only real major league player who was actually in the game in the movie.
And what That's was his name, true. Todd? What was
his name? His name is Carney Lansford. His hit or die something or other. That's all I remember.
Hit or die Kelsey. And what was he spitting at the end?
Isn't it licorice? Not actually chewing tobacco.
Yes, it is licorice.
Because it's a Disney movie, won't let him chew actual.
Oh yeah,
exactly. Actually, I did on IMDb and I found like three people that were actually real baseball players.
Yeah, and by the way, it's funny that you mentioned the chewing tobacco thing because this movie has a huge anti-smoking sentiment for like a good 20 minutes of the movie, including the fact that Mel is going to die from smoking too much.
This film had a lot of bad words in it as well, and it's still rated PG. And just bringing this up, it was kind of I thought it was kind of very noble of Disney to do well. You know, baseball, you know, is a man's sport, and so is softball. Well, softball's a woman's. It's a sport. Let's just get down to that, you know. And everybody's going to be bad talking each other. So I'm glad they put like. Well, not glad, but, you know, of course they're going to put some, you know, words in there, but it's not too horrible. Some of the words you can't even barely hear, but, you know, Roger, who's played by Joseph, he asks not to stop cursing and tell everybody to stop cursing, because the angels aren't going to come if you curse, so,
yeah.
You know.
Aren't the angels in general in the movie, so let's just, we didn't cover this, but so... Because you're bringing it up. So one of the things is they won't show up if you're swearing, right? But
no,
these angels...
That's what Roger's assuming. I don't think he says, I don't think they like the swearing.
That's true. But they sure are okay with cheating. I'm just saying.
Who cheated?
Al?
The angels are.
The angels.
Al did. Al moved that foul line. I'm pretty sure Al moved that foul line.
I'm sorry, but the other team was not fast enough in getting the ball. It's getting a ball that is swinging right over your head and, like, right next to your arm. I don't think it was that hard to get those balls. The angels were
Tammy.
Being pretty nice.
Tammy.
I am telling the truth. They weren't even trying.
I mean, but seriously, they cheat and cheat and cheat. That's the whole reason they're there.
But that's why they're not there in the last game.
But that's the problem, because they don't even play for anything of consequence in the movie. They've been through the season, and it's the last game of the season. They're tied with the White Sox, so... The winner is the winner of the division, and then would start the playoffs. Like they're not even in the playoffs in the movie, but they're presenting it as though they won the pennant, which they did not.
So what are they winning?
Nothing. The division title.
Their division.
Why are they acting like they won the World Cup?
That's a good question.
Sorry, the wrong person.
No, they are acting like they won the World Cup. It's okay.
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
If only we knew.
So, in the movie, you see a few of the angels up close. I think most of them are just go by the screen in blurs, but there's three who you get a really good face shot on. One of them is, he's one of the ones who drags the ball very quickly to one direction. This actor is Lionel Douglas. He actually did a stint as Big Bird on Sesame Street for many years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no kidding.
Didn't know that.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, Very so Big Bird is in this movie.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Yep. I thought you'd like that.
Yeah. All right.
And can I say that the girl who plays the angel is very pretty, and it looks like she does great back massages.
Indeed.
I just thought I'd mention that. So.
It's very true.
Yes.
All right. So, what else you got for me, Tom?
Oh, I just wanted to give a shout out to Tony Longo because when I was growing up, one of the first shows that I ever got to watch on HBO was First and Ten.
And
he was a character from this, and he was still, you know, rocking that during this time period. So
that'd be another sports reference, Tammy.
You know, don't even mention sports to me because I'm just going to ask you why this, why that, because I don't understand anything. So I want to go back to my favorite scene, the locker scene. George Knox says, I want you here at 9 a.m. tomorrow. We're going over fundamentals. And then somebody, one of the players says, fundamentals in the middle of the season? And that is Mitchell Paige. And he was a Major League Baseball player for about 8 years. And he was designated hitter and outfielder for the Oakland Athletes. And unfortunately, he passed away in March in 2011 at age 59. So I just wanted to, you know, give him a shout out. Now he isn't officially an angel. So I just thought that was sweet.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's all I have to say.
Well, I have to say, depending on your belief, he may or may not be an angel. That's a whole different discussion.
That's a whole other show. All right, so we have had a fun-filled and action-packed time talking about Angels in the Outfield, but now comes the moment of truth. What did we think of it? Mr. Todd Perlmutter, what did you think of Angels?
Oh, boy, I'm going first a lot lately. Here's the thing. I guess had you asked me back when I first saw this 15 years ago, I might have rated this higher. I actually do not feel that this movie stands the test of time. So I think seeing it more recently, I actually feel compelled to rate it lower than I might have back then. Not to skirt the guest or anything like that, because I know she loves this movie. And it's not that I dislike the movie. I mean, I would watch the movie again, most likely. I've still got it on my computer right now. Just like I said, it's just not a strong movie. You know, its message is strong, but the movie itself is not strong. So I will have to go with the 2.5 stars on this one.
Is it out of 5?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I got it.
So, Ms. Bree, your thoughts?
I enjoyed the film. I like the spiritual background of it. I like the message they were sending. You know, the actors are very good. Who doesn't love Danny Glover? And it was fun. It was great, like we were talking about, seeing all these future actors appear in this film. Of course, there were the discrepancies, as we talked about, with why one game instead of three. You know, things like that. A lot of things just didn't make sense, but... I did thoroughly enjoy it. I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
All right. Cheryl, you want to take a stab at it?
Yes, I do. I really think that I disagree from Todd. Seeing this 10 years later, I appreciate it a little bit more. Because after seeing duds like Air Bud and, Baseball Bud, Bud Buddies... All those things. I mean, it makes you really appreciate this movie more, and that, you know, they can do something like that. Like this was better in my eyes. So I kind of thought maybe a 4, maybe a 3.7. But I mean, definitely. I mean, you gotta rate it against other lame movies like that. That's what kind of I'm reading.
Oh, well, okay, so if we were comparing this against Beverly Hills Chihuahua, this is a 5.
Oh, please.
Oh, by far, yes.
Yeah.
But I think it's a 4, but like I said, I really enjoyed watching it since I hadn't seen it in a while. But like I said, I definitely agree it's better than, you know, I think The Rookie is better, yes. I definitely agree with that. Better baseball, better... But it's an easy way of teaching, you know, the basics of baseball, not exactly the exact things of baseball, but it teaches you a little bit of the basics.
Teaches you the uniforms.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's about all the basics there is. All right, Tammy, I don't think we even have to ask, but in case we do, what did you think?
Well, you know, after this fun-filled night of recording, you guys have convinced, you have, you did pull me into perspective on some things of this film, some things I didn't even, you know, think about. You know, with me, I really don't think, I just speak. But anyways, I'm going to rate it out of starfish. I guess I'm going to go with a 4 with Cheryl on this, because I really do agree. I would have liked to seen Angels, but, you know, I think me and Bree would both agree that we would really like to have seen Neil a little bit more, you know, being funny of himself. You know, I know we had a lot of him in the film, but, you know, I think seeing more of the players interacting with the Angels, it would have been a lot nicer. But I'm going to still say that this is my favorite baseball movie, even though I've seen no other baseball movies before, which I will watch The Rookie just for Cheryl. So I do like this movie, and it does hold a special place in my heart. So what about you, Ryan? What do you think?
It's good that you ask. I would give this one a 3 because it is a baseball movie, so that makes it an automatic good movie in my eyes because I love baseball. The fact that they got the baseball wrong irritates me. It is kind of a troped story. So, like, the plot itself, although okay, is not, you know, supreme. It's enjoyable enough. It's very predictable, but as we've said many times on this show, it's not about knowing what's coming next, it's about how you get there. And so the journey is pretty enjoyable. If they could get the baseball right, I might bump my rating up a little bit. But, you know, these things happen. So I will give it a 3. All right. So Angels in the Outfield, in case you missed it, that's what we talked about. So go back and listen. If you're just listening to this part, that'd be kind of weird. But that's our review of the movie. You can go check out the show notes at DisneyFilmProject.com, and you can tell us what you think of the show. You can go to Facebook.com/DisneyFilmProject, and you can tell us what you thought of the movie there, or you can tweet us. Go to @DisFilmProject on Twitter and tweet us and let us know what you thought of Angels in the Outfield. That'd be great. You can also listen to the show on Stitcher Radio. Until next week, you can keep up with us at DisneyFilmProject.com. You can follow our blogs. We all have wonderful blogs that you can listen, you can read. You could listen to them, I guess, but I don't know how you would do that. You can read our blogs, Todd and myself, at TouringPlans.com. Or myself at DisneyDrivenLife.com, where Todd does the chief technical officering. You can read Bree's blogs over at Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com. Or you can keep up with our fabulous guest, Tammy, and you can listen to her program, the Tierra Talk Show, and listen to this interview that they are conducting, Bree and her, with Neil McDonough. I think that will be the most exciting thing that happens in the world that week.
So you got that right. And maybe we'll get to see his mustache. That's what Bree's looking forward to.
I think so.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
She's also going to try and get Chris Evans' phone number from him.
Yes. That was a whole other thing.
All right. So that'll do it for this week's show. So leave us a review on iTunes. That's another thing that would be great if you could do that. That helps people find the show. So until next week, keep playing baseball, guys.
Bye.
Amen and OA women.
Like Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Thank you, guys, and it could happen.